I'll take the bitch with the knife, said Kate, driving the switchblade into the woman's thigh. She shrieked, and Kate got her hands up and shoved the woman's arm, ducking out from under the blade. At the same moment, August lunged, knocking the man with the gun back as hard as he could into the one behind him. The gun went off, then clattered to the tarmac as the two went down, a foot away from where the others grappled and swore, knife and bat forgotten. August heard the rumble of an approaching truck, the short, sharp burst of its horn, and grabbed Kate's hand and ran. Shouts rang out after them, along with the sound of a body hitting pavement and muffled curses. But August didn't look back as he and Kate sprinted around the corner of the truck stop and across the glaring tarmac toward the open gate. The truck pulled through and the barricade began to close. The guards were turned away, eyes fixed on the darkness beyond the semi, and by the time they saw August and Kate coming, it was too late. They were out and through, moments before the gate slid home and locked. They veered off the light-lined road and into the fields, August straining to hear the sound of tires over his pounding heart. But the trucks didn't follow, the guards didn't fire, and the gate didn't open. Still, they didn't stop, didn't look back. August lost track of the seconds, lost track of the fact that Kate's hand was still tangled in his, lost track of the fever and the pain. Was he crazy, or was it actually starting to fade? They ran, cutting a jagged path through wild grass, past bunkers and lines of trees, and by the time they finally slowed to a walk and then at last a stop, they were alone, surrounded by nothing but darkness and the distant glow of the road. Kate gasped for breath, pressing a hand to her wounded stomach, and August sank to his knees, fingers splaying in the cool, damp dirt. He wanted to lie down, to press his cheek to the ground the way Ilsa did, and just listen. Kate dropped to her knees beside him, her shoulder against his, and for several long moments they sat there, swallowed up by the wild grass. The night was so quiet, the world so calm. It was hard to believe there was any danger in it. August caught the distant grumble of trucks and tensed, but the semis held to the road, none of them bold enough to venture beyond the safety of the light. When they finally got to their feet, the first light of dawn was beginning to break across the horizon, turning the world a bruised purple instead of black. His vision swam, and Kate reached out a hand to steady him. "You okay?" The question echoed in his head, rippling his thoughts like a stone in a pond, becoming an answer as it spread. "Okay. Okay. Okay." And it was crazy. It was impossible. But he was. The pain was thinning. His muscles and bones finally starting to loosen. He drew in a shuddering breath, shock mixing with joy. Leo was wrong. He'd done it. He'd come through. "August?" pressed Kate. "Are you okay?" "Yes," he said, the word filling his body and mind. It was the truth. "Good." She had something cupped in her hand. She turned it toward the thin dawn light, and then started walking. "Where are we going?" he asked, falling in step behind her. Kate didn't look back, but the answer reached him, catching on the air and carrying like music. Home. Verse 4. Face your monsters. Chapter 1. For 6 years, home had been a house at the eastern edge of the waste, far enough from the darkness that no one came, far enough from the nearest town that the lights didn't reach. V-City was a place from the past, a place for the future, but Kate and her mother lived in the present. She wanted to remember it as boring, dull, restless, but the truth was, it was perfect. And she was happy. The kind of happy that smoothed time into still frames. arms wrapped around her shoulders while she read. A warm voice humming while fingers braided her hair. Wildflowers in vases and cups and bowls, wherever they would fit. Color everywhere, and sunsets turning the fields to fire. Somewhere else, the world was really burning. Somewhere else, shadows had claws and teeth, and nightmares came to life. But there, in the house at the edge of the waste, it hadn't reached them. There, it was easy to forget that the world was broken. The only thing missing was her father. And even he was there, in the photographs, in the shipments of supplies, in the promises that soon they could come home. After, she told herself a lot of things. That she'd always wanted to leave. That she was sick of the little house. That when she spoke of home, she meant the capital. The sun rose against Kate's back, showering the fields ahead of her with light. Dew glittered on the tips of the grass and dampened her pants from shoe to knee, and the world smelled fresh and clean in a way the city never did. August walked a few steps behind, and Kate watched the coordinates of the watch shift up and down, inching closer. He was quiet, but so was she. They skirted factories and storage facilities, each guarded as heavily as the horizon, and caught the wary gaze of a haggard-looking woman standing outside a squat compound, checking to make sure she hadn't lost anything in the night. Mid-morning, Kate saw a skeletal town in the distance, light glinting off the metal roofs and outer walls. They steered clear, kept to the tree lines when there were trees, and the tall grass when there were none. And the whole time, Kate kept her eyes on the watch, the numbers edging closer, closer, closer. Up ahead, the woods came into sight. Memory flickered behind her eyes. The barricade of trees that looked dense but gave way to a smaller field half a mile in. And a house. They crossed the tree line before Kate realized that she couldn't hear August's steps behind her anymore. She turned and found him a little ways back, running his fingertips thoughtfully over a chestnut tree. "Come on," she called. "We're almost there." He didn't move. "August?" "Shh," he said, closing his eyes. It finally stopped. She walked back toward him. "What stopped?" "The gunfire," he whispered. Kate frowned, looked around. "What are you talking about?" August's eyes drifted open again, his gaze fixed on the rough bark. "Leo was wrong," he said softly, his voice strangely musical. "He told me it was who I was, what I was, and I believed him. But he was wrong, because I'm still here." He broke into a boyish grin. She had never seen him smile. Not like that. "I'm still here, Kate." "Okay, August," she said, confused. "You're still here." "The hunger hurt so much at first, but now..." Kate froze. "How long have you been hungry?" He just laughed. A simple, delighted noise that sounded so wrong coming from his lips. And then his gaze met hers and Kate caught her breath. His eyes were burning. Not just fever bright, but on fire. The center's icy blue, the edges licked with gold. It was like staring into the sun. She had to look away. "August, it's okay," he said cheerfully. "I'm better now. Don't you see? I'm about to set the woods on fire," she said, coming toward him with her hands up. "Why didn't you tell me?" She looked around as if there might be a sinner conveniently waiting. But of course, there were no sinners nearby because there were no people nearby. They were in the middle of a fucking forest, in the middle of the fucking countryside. Kate closed her eyes, trying to think, and then felt a flash of heat and opened them to find August's fingers grazing her cheek. "It's okay," he said gently. She pulled back. "Your hand."
"My hand," he echoed, considering it. "It looks like yours, but it's not, because I'm not. I'm not like you. You look like me, but that's wrong, isn't it?
August.
I look like you, but you were born and grew and I wasn't and then was. Not like this, not exactly. Smaller, younger."
He rambled, a kind of manic energy rising in his voice.
"But I start from nothing, and then all of a sudden I'm something, all at once, like the opposite of death. I've never thought of it that way."
She touched his forehead, jerked away. "You're really burning up." He smiled, that dazzling, delighted smile.
"Just like a star. Did you know that all the stars are burning? It's just a whimper and a bang, or a bang and a whimper. I can't remember, but I know that they're burning."
She turned and started pulling him through the trees. Heat wicked off him now and flowed over her skin where it met his sleeve.
"So many tiny fires in the sky and so much dark between them. So much darkness. So much madness." He cut off.
"No. What is it?" He jerked free, brought his hands to his head.
"No, no, no,"
he pleaded, folding to his knees.
"Anger, madness, joy, I don't want to keep going."
"Come on," whispered Kate, crouching beside him. "We're almost there." But he'd started shaking his head and couldn't seem to stop. She could feel the anxiety rippling off him like heat, seeping into her skin. His lips were moving, and she could just make out the words,
"I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay."
She wrapped her arm around his waist to help him up. His shirt was slick, and she thought it must be sweat. But the rest of him looked dry, and when she pulled back, her fingers came away black.
"August," she said slowly. "I think you're bleeding."
He looked down at his body, as if he didn't recognize it. And when he didn't move, Kate reached out and guided up his shirt. She could see the place where a bullet had grazed his ribs. He touched his side and stared at the streak of blackish blood on his hand as if it was a foreign thing. The manic smile was gone, and suddenly he looked young and sad and terrified.
"No," he whispered. "This is wrong."
He was right. Sue and I were supposed to be invincible.
Nothing is invincible.
It had to be the hunger, somehow wearing away at his strength.
"Let's go,"
she said, trying to help him up, but he pulled her down instead. Her knees sank into the mossy earth, and his fingers dug into her arms. He was shaking now, the short-lived euphoria plunging into something else. Tears streamed down his face, evaporating before they reached his jaw.
"Kate,"
he said with a sob.
"I can't keep going toward the edge. Don't let me fall."
His breath hitched.
"I can't. I can't do it again. I can't go dark again. I'm holding on to every little piece, and if I let go, I can't get them back. I don't want to disappear."
"Okay, August," she said, trying to keep her voice calm and even.
"I won't let you fall."
He buried his burning forehead on her shoulder.
"Please,"
he whispered.
"Promise me."
She reached up and stroked his hair. "I promise," she said. They'd made it this far. They would get to the house, cool him down, get the money from the safe, get the car from the garage, and they would drive until they found something, someone for him to eat.
"Stay with me,"
she said, taking his hand and rising to her feet.
"Stay with me."
Heat prickled through her fingers, at first pleasant, and then painful. But she didn't let go. Chapter 2. They made it to the house.
Gravel crunched beneath her feet as Kate half-led, half-dragged August across the field and past the overgrown drive and up the front steps. The blue paint on the front door had faded, the garden plants had all gone wild, and a spider web of a crack ran across a pane of glass. But otherwise, the house looked exactly as it had. Like a photograph, thought Kate. Edges frayed, color fading, but the picture itself unchanged. August slumped against the steps as Kate scavenged under weedy grass for the drain pipe and the small magnetic box with the key hidden inside. She'd knock the door in if she had to, but it had lasted this long, and she didn't like the thought of being the one to break it now.
"Tell me something,"
murmured August, echoing her words from the car. His breathing was ragged. "Like what?" she asked, parroting his answer.
"I don't know,"
he whispered, the words trailing off into a sob of grief or pain. He curled in on himself, the violin case slipping from his shoulder and hitting the steps with a thud.
"I just wanted to be strong enough."
She found the box and fumbled to get it open. She didn't realize her hands were shaking until the sliver of metal went tumbling into the weeds and she had to dig it out. "This isn't about strength, August. It's about need. About what you are."
"I don't want to be this."
She let out an exasperated sound. Why couldn't he have eaten? Why couldn't he have told her? Her fingers found the key and she straightened, shoved it into the lock and turned. It was such a small gesture, but the muscle memory was overpowering. The door swung open. She knew the place would look abandoned, but the sight still caught her off guard. The stale air, the surfaces covered in dust, the tendrils of weed creeping up through the wooden floorboards. She almost called out for her mom. The urge was sudden and painful, but caught herself and helped August inside. Her feet carried her through the front room. She found the generator box in the kitchen, flipped the switches the way she had 100 times, the gestures simple, automatic. She didn't wait for the lights to hum on, but went straight for the bathroom with its warm blue and white tiles, its porcelain tub. She snapped the shower on, praying the rain tank still worked. There was a groaning sound in the pipes, and moments later, water began to rain down. Rust red at first, but then cold and crystal clear. August was there behind her, swaying on his feet. He set the violin case down, managed to get off his jacket and shoes before stumbling forward, catching himself on the lip of the tub. Kate went to steady him, but he threw out a hand in warning. The tallies were burning up his arm and back, singeing through his shirt. He dragged it off, and she saw 423 white-hot lines blazing across his skin. She didn't know what to do.
"Go."
The word was a whisper, a plea. "I'm not
please."
His voice was shaking, heat rippling his hair like a breeze, and when he looked over his shoulder at her, the bones of his face were glowing white-hot, while his eyes were turning darker, black pressing in on the flames. She took a step back, and August climbed into the shower half-dressed, gasping as the cold water struck his skin and turned to steam. She turned toward the bathroom door and heard a voice through the hiss and crackle of the shower. Little more than a breath, but still somehow audible.
"Thank you."
Kate's hand was throbbing as she ran it under the kitchen tap. It looked like she'd put it on a stove. It felt that way, too. All she'd done was take August's hand and not let go.
"Anger, madness, joy. I don't want to keep going."
That's what he'd said in the woods. Whatever he was going through now wasn't joy. How long had he been suffering? She'd noticed the temper when the car broke down, but he'd managed to keep most of the madness to himself. The joy he couldn't. And now? The sound of his pained voice clawed inside her head.
"I don't want to disappear."
She set the blood-stained spikes in the sink, cut the tap, and wove back through the house. The bathroom was clouded with steam, But August was no longer standing in the shower, and she panicked until she noticed his mop of dark hair cresting the wall of the tub.
I can't keep going toward the edge.
His eyes were closed, his head tipped back, his body dangerously still beneath the shower's stream as the water rose over his hips.
Don't let me fall.
August, she said quietly. He didn't answer, didn't move. Kate forced herself forward, holding her breath until August gave a small shudder. She exhaled, relieved by the subtle motion. His teeth were clenched, his eyes squeezed shut against the fire. She watched as he took a breath and went under. He didn't come back up. His bones had stopped glowing, easing the skeletal effect that made her think of Maokai, of monsters. Beneath the water, August looked so human. A teenage boy, his long limbs folded up and his black curls floating around his face. She counted the seconds, watching the last of the breath leave his lips, wondering if she'd need to pull him out. And then, at last, he surfaced. He gripped the rim of the tub and dragged himself up, water streaming into his eyes. They were no longer on fire, but they hadn't returned to pale gray either. They were darker, the color of charcoal, set too deep in his hollowing face. Kate knelt and curled her fingers over his. His hand tensed beneath hers, but his skin had cooled enough to touch, and he didn't pull away. Kate, he murmured, his vision sliding in and out of focus. I'm here, she said. Where are you? August closed his eyes, took a long breath.
Lying on my bed, he whispered. Listening to music while my cat chews on the corner of a book.
Kate almost laughed. It was such an ordinary answer. His hand was getting hot again, so she let her fingers slide from his and sank back against the tub wall. Behind her, the shower almost sounded like rain, and she dug the silver medallion from beneath her collar, rubbing a thumb absently over the surface.
Your house, said August tiredly, and she couldn't tell if it was a question.
It was, said Kate, turning the pendant between her fingers. A small, shuddering sigh from the tub.
Why are there so many shadows in the world, Kate? Shouldn't there be just as much light?
I don't know, August.
I don't want to be a monster.
You're not, she said, the words automatic. But as she said it, Kate realized that she believed it, too. He was a Sunai. Nothing was going to change that. But he wasn't evil, wasn't cruel, wasn't monstrous. He was just someone who wanted to be something else. Something he wasn't. Kate understood the feeling.
It hurts, he whispered.
What does? Asked Kate.
Being. Not being. Giving in. Holding out. No matter what I do, it hurts.
Kate tipped her head back against the tub.
That's life, August, she said.
You wanted to feel alive, right? It doesn't matter if you're monster or human. Living hurts. She waited for him to say more, wondering why she no longer felt the urge to talk. Maybe she was finally out of secrets, or maybe she was just getting used to him. When she couldn't take the silence anymore, she got to her feet, stiff from the tile floor, and made her way down the hall to the first door on the left. Beneath the film of dust, her bedroom walls were yellow. Not sunflower yellow, but pale, almost white. The color of the sun, the real sun, not the one kids drew. The bed was narrow but soft, and there were drawings tacked up on one wall. She rifled through the drawers and found an old journal and a few discarded pieces of clothing, things she hadn't bothered to take with her back to V-City. They were all too small, of course, but Kate had to get out of her ruined clothes, so she continued to her mother's room at the end of the hall. The door wasn't shut all the way, and it swung open under her touch. The room beyond was simple and dark, the curtains drawn, but the sight of the bed, with its nest of pillows, sent an ache through her. If Kate closed her eyes, she could see herself sprawled on that bed, reading, while her mother playfully covered her with those pillows one by one. She stepped slowly across the floor, over a weed growing up between the floorboards, and sank on the edge of the bed, ignoring the plume of dust. Beneath the dust, it still smelled like her mother, and before she knew what she was doing, Kate had curled up in the sea of pillows, burying her face in the nearest one. Home, she thought, as the memory reached up and dragged her under. They'd been back in V-City for 4 months, and Kate still couldn't sleep. Every night she dreamed of monsters, teeth and claws and crimson eyes, and every night she woke up screaming. "I want to go home," she told her mother. "We are home, Kate." But it didn't feel right. It wasn't like the stories her mother had told her when she was growing up. There was no happy family, no loving father, only a shadow she hardly saw and the monster in his wake. "I want to go home," she pleaded every time she woke. "I want to go home," she begged every time her mother put her back to bed. "I want to go home." Her mother was getting thinner, her eyes rimmed with red. The city was eating her, piece by piece. And then, one night, she said, "Okay, I'll talk to your father," she promised. "We'll work it out." The night of the accident, Kate was still dreaming, still trapped in a room of violent shadows, when her mother shook her awake. "Get up, Kate. We have to go." An angry red mark flared on her mother's cheek, a welt with an H in the middle. The echo of Callum Harker's ring where it had struck her face. Weaving through the darkened penthouse, a shattered glass, a toppled chair, the office door sealed shut and sleep still clinging to Kate, tripping up her feet.
"Where are we going?"
she asked in the elevator.
"Where are we going?"
she asked in the garage.
"Where are we going?"
she asked as the car's engine came to life and her mother finally answered, "We're going home." They never made it. Kate sat up. Tears were streaming down her face, making tracks in the dust. She scrubbed her cheeks with the back of her hand.
"I want to go home."
The words had been hers, always hers. She'd said them 100 times. When had they gotten twisted, tangled, confused? That plea, that night, her father's H bruised into her mother's skin. What else had she forgotten? The accident spiraled through her mind, pieces fitting into the gaps. The sudden headlights, as if they'd veered into oncoming traffic. But they hadn't. It was the other car that swerved. And then her mother's gasp, her sudden jerk on the wheel as she tried to get out of the way. Too late. The horrible momentum of the crash, the sound of crushed metal and broken glass, and the blinding force of her skull meeting the window. Her mother, slumped against the wheel, broken lungs fighting for air once, twice. The world suddenly so still, white noise in her ears and blood in her eyes, and beyond the broken glass, her father's pet, just standing there, his crimson gaze sharp and his mouth curled into a rictus grin. Kate surged up off the bed and retched on the old wood floor. She crouched there, forcing air into her lungs. How could she forget so much? But she remembered now. She remembered everything. And those memories didn't belong to a different Kate. They were hers. Her life. Her loss. And one way or another, she would have Sloane's heart. Shaking, she got to her feet, steadied herself, and rounded the bed. She rolled the rug up with her shoe, fingers skimming the wooden floor until she found the lip of the loose board and shifted it aside. Nestled in the darkness beneath, she found the metal case and lifted it free. She spun the lock, lining up the numbers until the case clicked open. Inside, she found a clip of cash, a set of border papers, and a handgun. Her mother hadn't wanted to take it, but Harker insisted. So she had put it here with the other things she didn't need. Kate pocketed the cash, checked the gun's magazine, it was full of silver tips, and slid it into her waistband, tucked against her spine, before turning to the papers. She thumbed through the stack, hesitating when she saw Alice Harker's face staring up at her. She put her mother's papers back in the box, folded her own, and got up. In her mother's chest of drawers, Kate found a dark sweater, and when she held it up, she was surprised to see how close they were in size. Another reminder of how much time had passed. She set the sweater on the chest of drawers and stripped off August's jacket and the shirt beneath, cringing at the way her stitches tugged as she pulled on the clean clothes, the silver medallion warm against her bare skin. She closed her eyes and brought the sweater cuffs to her nose, inhaling the fading scent of lavender. Her mother had tucked it into all the drawers to keep the clothes fresh. She found a t-shirt for August and slung it over her shoulder. The bathroom was still quiet in that heavy way, so she hung the shirt on the door and went outside, padding across the tangled grass and ruined garden toward the small garage. The sun was already starting to sink, but the light caught on something in the distance, beyond the line of trees and back in the direction of the waste. Kate squinted. It looked like some kind of warehouse or an industrial barn. It was new. At least it hadn't been there 6 years ago. But the whole thing was still. No smoke rising from the chimneys. No trucks coming and going. No perimeter. Either it had been abandoned or raided. Inside the garage, she found the car. It had gone unused, even when they lived here, but her mom had insisted on having one in case of emergencies. The day they returned to V-City, Harker had sent a small entourage to pick them up, so there'd been no reason to take it. She disconnected the battery from the generator and closed the hood. She tipped a gallon of gas into the tank and tried the door. It creaked, but came open, and Kate lowered herself into the driver's seat and found the key tucked against the visor. She slid it into the ignition, held her breath, and turned. On the first try, the motor shuddered. On the second, it started. A victorious sound escaped her throat. And then, as she turned the car off, she heard the rumble of a second engine, a distant truck. She held her breath and reminded herself that the main road lay on the other side of an incline and beyond the line of trees. She reminded herself that no one could see the house from there. But she still stayed in the car, gripping the wheel, until all she could hear was her heart. Chapter 3. August knew he was losing his mind. The worst part was he could feel it happening. The sickness had taken over his body, infecting his thoughts, and now he was trapped inside himself, caught in a haze like a dreamer trapped at the edge of sleep. He could feel the corner of the dream, but he couldn't reach it, couldn't pull himself out. He couldn't hold on to his words either. They slid through his thoughts and out of his mouth, and then they were gone before he could grasp their meaning. The pain had faded for a while, smothered by madness and joy, but now the tally seared across his skin again, pulsing hotly, and the gunshots rang through his head in a barrage of white noise. He pressed his burning forehead against the cold tiles, his skin hissing like doused fire as the cold fought against the fever. His body finally cooled and he slumped back against the wall of the tub, letting the cold water rinse over his shins, up his spine, closing over his ribs. Kate came and went, her dark eyes floating in the steam, here and gone, and here again. She was here now.
"Listen to me," he said, trying to hold on to the words before they got away. "You need to go."
"No."
"You can't be here when I fall."
Her hand on his again, one of them cold and the other hot, and he didn't know which was which. Lines were blurring. "I'm not going to let you fall, August." Again, the fear, the wrenching sadness.
"I can't."
"You can't hurt me," she cut in. "Not as long as you're you, right? So I'm going to stay." He clenched his teeth, closed his eyes, and tried to focus on his heart, his bones, his muscles, his nerves. Picked himself apart piece by piece, cell by cell, tried to feel every little atom that added up to him. Every one of those atoms begged him to let go, to give in, to let the darkness wash over him. He felt himself sliding toward unconsciousness and forced himself awake, scared that if he went under now, something else would surface. Kate perched on the edge of the couch, a cigarette between her teeth. She'd scavenged and come up with half a pack, her mother's old stash.
"Those things can kill you," he'd said that first day.
Kate's lips quirked around the cigarette. She clicked the silver lighter, watched the flame dance in front of the tip, then put the fire out and tossed the cigarette aside, unlit.
"Plenty of other ways to die."
She clicked the television on, cringing at the sight of her face on the screen. "The hours since Harker's press conference," the news anchor was saying. "There has been a rise in unrest along the seam, and FTF and Harker forces have reportedly come to blows. We go now to Henry Flynn." The screen cut to a press conference. A slim man stood behind a podium, back straight. A dark-skinned woman stood at his left, her hand on his shoulder. His wife, Emily. On his other side, an FTF with his arm in a sling. Thousands of task force members, and Flynn had picked a wounded one. Clever, thought Kate grudgingly, casting himself as the victim. Then again, he was. His son was missing, framed for a crime he didn't commit. Because of her father. Because of her.
"My family had nothing to do with the attack on Catherine Harker."
"Is it true you planted a spy at her school?"
"Is it true one of your Sunai is missing?"
"Is it true..." Kate clicked the television back off, dug the cell from her pocket, and was halfway through a message to her father when a sound cut through her thoughts. Tires. On gravel. Her head snapped up. The sound had been muffled by the TV and the hiss of the shower, and by the time she got off the couch and looked out the window, the car was pulling to a stop out front. A man climbed out of the driver's side, young and lean in a black FTF cap. Kate tensed. A member of Flynn's task force? She tugged the gun from her back and switched off the safety as the man climbed the steps and knocked. Her stomach dropped as she saw the handle. She hadn't locked the door.
"August Flynn?"
called the man. And then...
"Are you in there?"
Kate held her breath. What was he doing here? She hesitated. Maybe it was safe. Maybe he didn't mean them any harm. Maybe she could go with August to South City. The man started knocking again, and she began to creep across the living room, unsure of whether she was going toward the door or the hall. Maybe. But how had he found them? The knocking stopped.
"Catherine Harker?"
called the voice. Her chest tightened.
"I know you're in there."
Her eyes were trained on the front door, so she didn't see the side table, the one she always used to catch her knee on. Her shin caught the wooden leg, and the framed photo on top fell face down with a hard snap. The handle began to turn, and Kate took off toward the hall. She was halfway there when the door burst open. August heard a sound beyond the shower, a heavy beat. He thought it could be one of Kate's songs, but there were no words, only the repetitive thud, thud, thud. August dragged himself into a sitting position. It hurt to breathe, hurt to move, but he was still here, still him. He got to his feet, pants plastered to his skin with water, and swayed, then steadied himself against the tile wall as he turned the shower off, straining to hear over the pulse of the gunfire in his head. But beyond the harsh staccato, he heard his name, and then the sound again. And he realized it had the steady cadence of a fist against wood. Thud, thud, thud. He stepped out of the tub, feeling like his body was made of glass. One wrong move and it would simply shatter. He braced himself a moment on the edge. Kate, he called. And then he heard the crash. The door burst open as Kate crossed the entryway. The man caught her around the waist, and the two went down struggling. He landed on top of her hard, wrenching her wrists over her head, but she got her knee up into his stomach and then her foot, sending him back into the wall as she rolled over and up and leveled the gun. Don't move, she growled, heart racing, but hands steady. His hat had fallen off and his hair fell into his eyes, but not before she saw the ruined H on his cheek. Not FTF then, one of Sloan's. Put your hands up. Miss Harker, he said smoothly, half raising one hand, the other still behind his back. I'm not here to kill you. She cocked the gun. Hands up. There's no need for this, said the man, but his eyes were hard, calculating. Your father sent me. Her eyes flicked from the hat on the floor to the scar on his forehead. Bullshit. It was just a disguise, he said evenly, in case the monster came to the door. An almost arrogant smile. How else would I know your location, Miss Harker? Why would he send you? He was worried. And the scar? He tilted his head, hair falling aside to reveal the mark. Quick, aren't you? Now put that down and show me your other hand. Slowly, smoothly, his hand emerged, holding a cell phone. See? He said smoothly. Put it on the... More tires on the gravel. Kate glanced away for an instant, but that was all it took. The man lunged for her weapon, and she swung back toward him as his fingers brushed the barrel, and she fired. The blast recoiled up her arms, and the sound tore through the room, turning the sound in her good ear to static. It wasn't a clean shot. The bullet took the man in the neck, burrowed a hole straight through into the wall behind him. The cell phone tumbled from his fingers, skidding across the floor as he clutched his throat. The blood was already spilling between his fingers and down his front, dripping to the wood. Red. Not the black blood of monsters, but the vivid red of human life. His lips moved, but Kate couldn't hear. And by the time she could, it was too late. He took a single, staggering step back into the wall, and then the life went out of his eyes and he fell, a body before he hit the floor. Kate couldn't tear her eyes from the spreading pool of blood. It should have been like killing a monster. It wasn't. A shiver went through her, and then she heard a ragged breath and looked up to see August standing at the mouth of the hall, soaking wet and doubled over in pain. No, not pain. Hunger. Kate, he gasped. When he dragged his head up, the light was gone. His eyes were wide and black. What have you done? Chapter 4 August's vision tunneled. The shadows in the room were bending, peeling away from the walls and the floor and tangling together around Kate. Her own shadow writhed around her as she moved toward him.
I didn't. He came at me. I thought...
She reached for his arm, soul pulsing like red light beneath her skin, and he staggered back. Away, away, away. He tried to make the words, but they were stuck in his throat. It felt like the gravity in the room was tipping, like any second the wall behind Kate would become the ground and he'd fall forward into her. But she just stood there, waiting. And all he had to do was reach out and grab her, dig his nails into her wounded shoulder and drag her soul to the surface, and the pain would stop. Everything would stop, and... Run, he pleaded, as his flesh burned and his bones sang. August, I... Run! This time, she listened. She staggered backward into the door and sprinted out into the dusk, just as a second car pulled up. Kate skidded to a stop on the gravel drive as a black sedan blocked her way. A Maokai she didn't know climbed out of one side, and Sloane stepped out of the other. His gaze tracked over her, his mouth drawing into a smile. Hello, Kate. The crashing car, that rictus grin, those blood-red eyes. She raised the gun. What are you doing here? He spread his arms, as thin as wire. I've come to take you home. My father didn't send you. But he did, Kate, despite all the bad things you've been whispering in his ear. Her fingers tightened on the gun. I'm not going anywhere with you. You sent those monsters to kill me, didn't you? Sloane considered her. And... You said you didn't do it. His smile was vicious. I never said that. Her father's words.
I questioned him myself. We both know he cannot lie.
It hit her like a blow. Sloane couldn't lie, but Harker could.
Oslo, said Sloane, addressing the other monster. Go get the Sunai. I'll handle this.
The Maokai started toward the house, and Kate swung the gun and fired. The silver-tip bullet buried itself in the monster's shoulder, and he snarled as black blood stained his shirt. Kate turned the gun back on Sloane, but he was already there, cold fingers vicing around her wrist and wrenching the barrel up.
This game again, he said dryly. Did you really think you could turn my master against me?
An edge of disdain on the word master. He pulled her toward him, and her free hand went for the lighter in her pocket just before his fingers closed around her throat. The moment they did, she drove the switchblade up into his wrist. Sloane recoiled at the silver, and she drew the knife free and tried to slash at his throat, but he was too fast. And before she could get in another shot, his fist connected with her jaw, and she went down hard, spitting blood into the gravel. The lighter skidded out of reach, and cold fingers curled around her wounded shoulder as he forced her onto her back and wrapped both hands around her throat.
Our little Catherine, all grown up.
She clawed at his wrist, but it was like fighting stone.
You think you deserve a chance to rule the city? It doesn't belong to you or Callum Harker. Not anymore. Soon the monsters will rise, and when they do, he leaned close, the city will be mine.
He knelt on her wounded ribs, and she tried to cry out, but there was no air. Her lungs screamed.
You've made a mess of things, he went on. Can't even die when you're supposed to. Even your mother could do that much.
She kicked and squirmed, trying to gain purchase, to get a leg up as her vision swam, tunneled.
I should kill you now, he said wistfully. It would be a kindness. But...
He slammed her head back into the ground, and everything went dark. August stumbled into the bathroom. He fell to his knees on the tile and pulled the violin case onto the floor in front of him, fumbling with the clasps as a shadow appeared in the doorway, its red eyes reflected in the mirror. August wasn't fast enough. His fingers barely brushed the strings of the violin before a boot connected with his ribs and sent him hard into the base of the sink. Porcelain cracked against his spine, knocked the air from his lungs.
"Well, well," came the Maokai's wet rasp. "Not so scary now, are you?"
August struggled up onto his hands and knees and crawled back toward the case, but the creature's boot came down on his wrist, grinding it into the tile floor. Pain flared through him, too bright, too human. Sharp nails hauled him up, and then he was flying backward into the wall so hard the tiles cracked and rained down around him when he fell. August tasted blood. Staggering upright as the Maokai's hand closed around the neck of his violin. No.
Sunai, eyes like coal,
sang the monster, running a nail along the string.
Sing you a song and steal your soul.
August lunged forward, but at the same moment the Maokai wound up and swung the violin at August's head. He tried to get his hand up to stop the blow or at least save the instrument, but he was too late, and the violin shattered against his skull, turning the world to splintered wood and broken strings and silence. Chapter 5. The world came back in pieces. Concrete beneath his knees, iron around his wrists, a shifting pool of light, a metallic tap, 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 the echo of large empty spaces. The world came back in pieces, and so did August. For a moment he was terrified that he'd lost himself, but the pain in his head, the ache in his wrists, and the searing heat across his skin told him that he hadn't gone dark. Not yet. He was kneeling on the floor of a warehouse, surrounded by glass and dust and a single harsh light, the edges so sharp that the space beyond registered as a wall of black. His arms had been wrenched up over his head. Pain flared around his wrists, and August could feel the metal chains cutting into the base of his hands, rubbing the flesh raw in a way they shouldn't be able to. Where was he? Where was Kate? The tapping continued from somewhere beyond the pool of light, and when August squinted, the first thing he saw wasn't the glint of metal or the smudge of skin, but the blazing red of the Maokai's eyes. August fought to get his feet under him as the creature in the black suit stepped forward, a long metal bar dangling from one hand, its edge sharp, jagged, as if broken off from some large machine. The torn end dragged along the concrete with a screech, and August winced as the sound knifed through his head. There was something strange about the monster. He was all bone, of course, but the lines of his face, the width of his shoulders, the way he carried himself, was almost human. Almost. August got one foot beneath himself before an electric droning started up, and the chains overhead drew taut, dragging him the rest of the way to his feet, and then onto his toes. He fought for purchase, his shoulders straining in their sockets. Since when did he feel the subtle tests of muscle and bone? His whole body felt fragile, breakable, and some distant part of his mind wondered if this was what it truly felt like to be human.
"August Flynn," said the Maokai, rolling the name off his tongue. "My name is Sloane."
Of course, Harker's pet.
"You know," continued Sloane, examining his fingers, which tapered into pointed nails. "You don't look very well."
He leaned forward.
"How long has it been since you fed?" August tried to say something and realized that he couldn't. His teeth were jammed together, his mouth sealed shut with tape.
"Oh, yes, that," said the Maokai. "I know the power of a Sunai's voice, especially if they turn. Leo and I have a bit of a history." A thoughtful pause. "You know, between your brother and your sister, I'm learning so much about your kind. But I'm getting ahead of myself." A second pair of red eyes floated in the darkness behind him, but Sloane's attention was on the metal pole in his hands. He brought the bar to rest against August's ribs, where the bullet wound from the truck stop was leaking a single line of black.
"You're bleeding," he said, tone twisted into a sick pantomime of worry.
"Isn't that strange?"
The bar fell away.
"You know, they say that Sunai are invincible, but we both know that isn't true."
Sloane wound up and swung the bar into August's ribs. The pain was shattering, and he could feel the bones threaten to crack, his consciousness fracturing around the blow. A groan escaped the gag. It felt like the tape was melting, fusing to his skin, the fumes choking his senses as he fought for air. His head swam.
"No. The hungrier you get, the closer you are to human. But close is not enough."
The jagged edge of the bar came up beneath his chin, forcing his head up.
"You can hurt. You can even bleed. But you just won't die."
The bar connected with August's collarbone, and pain exploded through his chest. He choked back a sob.
"You may be wondering," continued Sloane, taking the bar between both hands, "what I want from you right now, August."
He glared, trying to steady his breathing.
"It's really very simple."
His red eyes danced like flames in his skull.
"I want you to go dark."
The other Maokai, who'd edged forward to the rim of the light, shot Sloane a nervous look. But August felt ill. Sloane's smile sharpened.
"I think you know why."
August started to shake his head, and the bar connected with his ribs. An explosion of pain, and August bowed his head, trying to ground himself in it instead of being swept away. Nails dug into his jaw as Sloane dragged his head up.
"Think."
He tapped August's forehead with a pointed nail, then drew it down through his left eyebrow. The line of Leo's scar. It had never made sense, because Sunai didn't get scars, not when they were flesh and blood. Which meant that when Leo got it, he hadn't been.
"I think," said Sloane in his slick, wet voice, "that a Sunai's most powerful form is also its most vulnerable. I think that if you go dark, I'll be able to drive this bar right into your heart."
And then Sloane leaned in, close enough that August could feel the cold rot of the monster's soul against his fevered skin.
"In fact," he whispered, "I know. Because I put my theory to the test last night. With Ilsa."
August's heart stuttered. Bile rose in his throat. No. The darkness welled up, threatening to surface, and the Maokai hummed with pleasure.
"So many stars," said the monster.
"Don't worry, little brother.
I watch them all go out.
I'm not afraid of the dark."
"Right before I cut her throat."
When Cade opened her eyes, the world was still dark. No, not just dark, black. The heavy black of interior spaces without external light. Her head was pounding and her throat felt raw from where Sloane's fingers had clamped around it.
She drew a ragged breath and tasted the damp of abandoned places exposed to elements. The tang of metal and earth and stone. A shiver went through her, and she realized she was sitting on a floor, slumped against a wall, both surfaces concrete, and cold was soaking into her back and legs.